BBC Storyville, Afghanistan 2009. A Taliban proof of life video with the caption, Beau Robert Bergdahl, imprisoned by the Mujahideen.
What do I love in my life? Well, I love my family. My mom, Jannie, my father, Bob, my sister, I miss them, I love them, and I pray to God to see them again. Every day I want to go home. The pain in my heart to see my family again doesn't get any smaller. Release me, please. I'm begging you. Bring me home, please. Bring me home, please.
A woman sitting in the office of her rural bungalow.
So on Saturday, we were meeting some very dear friends at the park.
Right.
And that's when we got a telephone call. I'm trying not to cry so that you can understand what I'm saying. So we answer it and he said, Bob, I believe his exact words were, Bob, Jannie, we have him. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That was the only day I've been able to really...
Who was that who called? Who?
The president.
This morning, I called Bob and Jannie Bergdahl and told them that after nearly 5 years in captivity, their son, Beau, is coming home. Bob and Jannie, today families across America sharing the joy that I know you feel. As a parent, I can't imagine the hardship that you guys have gone through. As president, I know that I speak for all Americans when I say we cannot wait for the moment when you are reunited and your son, Beau, is back in your arms.
Beau Bergdahl was America's only POW in its long war in Afghanistan.
I just want to say thank you to everyone who has supported Beau. He's had a wonderful team everywhere.
I'd like to say to Beau right now, who's having trouble speaking English, Bismillah Rahman Rahim, Zayabayem. I'm your father, Beau. The people of Afghanistan, the same.
Bob and Jannie share a hug with President Barack Obama.
Bergdahl, then a private, walked off his military outpost in Paktika province, Afghanistan, in June 2009. He was held by the Taliban for 5 years before being freed in a controversial prisoner swap with five Taliban held at Guantanamo. Following his release in 2014, Bergdahl became a target for extraordinary claims by some sections of the US media.
New documents obtained by Fox News show that he declared himself a warrior for Islam, even taking part in AK-47 target practice with his captors and playing soccer with them.
Six young people, great people, were killed looking for him. He's a traitor, a no-good traitor. A dirty, rotten traitor. Somebody said the other day, well, he had some psychological problems. Well, you know, in the old days, bing, bong. With Bergdahl, who was a traitor, it was treason. You shoot him, he gets shot.
Brought home by one president and called a traitor by the next, Beau Bergdahl was charged with desertion and endangering the lives of his fellow soldiers. He's now become one of the most vilified men in a deeply divided America. But what is the truth behind all the allegations against him? And where did they come from? And what really happened to him during his time in captivity?
Coming home, Beau Bergdahl versus the United States. A man in his 40s with a short grey beard and wearing a round hat is riding in the back of a car through rugged shale-covered hills. Afghanistan, 2008.
I'm Sean Langan, a filmmaker and journalist. Back in 2008, I filmed these sequences in Afghanistan about the Taliban.
I've got a feeling we're close, that we're being watched.
A few months later, I crossed the border and was kidnapped in the tribal areas of Pakistan by the Haqqani network, close allies of the Taliban.
They're surrounding us.
They're the same group that captured Bo Bergdahl. I was held for 4 months, locked in a dark cell, interrogated and put through mock executions. So I understood what Bo meant when he later said, every second in captivity feels like an eternity.
From a built-up area of dusty Afghanistan to a tree-lined river in the States, cars driving along a highway, then a tall mountain range spreading out in the distance under cotton clouds.
6 weeks after Bo's release, I headed to the small town of Haley, Idaho, Bo's hometown. By the time I got there, allegations that Bo was not only a deserter, but a traitor and a collaborator too, were swirling around. But for Haley on July 4th, Bo's release was still a cause for celebration.
Happy 4th, happy birthday, America!
A man dressed in a Stars and Stripes-themed suit and hat with a beard waves a pair of flags at a parade. People on horseback wave to a crowd, and someone hangs a sign reading, Mission Accomplished, next to a banner that reads, Bring Bo Home.
I think for our town, it's just one of our own is coming home. So that's what's important.
He's just a hometown boy that we would love to have be home with his family.
I wanted to do a documentary really about coming home, but it's sensitive when it's someone like Bo.
He's one of ours. The end. We just wanted him back. And the rest of it isn't really our business.
No.
What's your name?
Sean.
Sean what?
Langan. But,
I think I know who you are.
Right.
Did you make a documentary about the group that Bo Bergdahl was with?
I was kidnapped by the same group.
You were kidnapped by the same
group?
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
The reason why I wanted to make a film about an American POW coming home was because as a former hostage, I knew coming home was often harder to endure than captivity itself. For 4 months, I was holding on whilst I was in captivity. And I knew I was in a fight and I had to batten down my emotions because I wanted to get home to see my kids. And I've kept two little photos hidden from the Taliban of my children. And then I get out, 12 hours later, I'm being strip searched by Scotland Yard police, taking DNA swabs, take all my belongings, and they took away my photos of the children I've kept hidden from the Taliban. And then they stuck me in an interview room, 4 months, locked in a dark room. I'd then spend my first day of freedom in an even smaller cell, having been strip searched and being interrogated. And I get it, no problem at all with that. But when you've been holding on and you come back and you think you're safe and you let go, you're in an incredibly vulnerable situation.
It's twilight and fireworks explode in a deep blue sky, and families hold each other as they watch. In night vision, automatic gunfire streaks across a green sky. An aerial gun camera shows rounds hitting a column of soldiers.
Clear fire.
Pause of gun and fire.
Shoot again. One more.
Afghanistan, 2009.
It was May 2009, the eighth year of America's war in Afghanistan, when Bo Bergdahl was sent to a remote outpost near the Pakistan border. These images of him at his base were filmed days before he disappeared. He'd been in Afghanistan for only 6 weeks.
He puts on armor at a machine gun nest.
In the middle of the night on June 30th, 2009, Bergdahl deserted his comrades, walking off into the mountains, taking with him nothing more than a camera, a knife, a compass, his journal, and a small selection of poems. He left his weapon behind.
Taliban proof of life video.
What's your name?
My name is Bo Bergdahl.
Where are you from?
I'm from Idaho, Haley, Idaho, in the USA.
What's the date today?
It is July 14th of 2009.
Within 2 weeks, the Haqqani network released a proof of life video and demanded a ransom.
A bald Bo's filmed eating. Fireworks explode in the States.
Fast forward 5 years, and while Haley, Idaho was celebrating Bo's release, for some in America, the mood was turning hostile. And Fox News weren't happy about Obama's trading Bo for the five Taliban prisoners held in Guantanamo.
But secondly, in releasing five of the most deadly terrorists that we had at Guantanamo.
Do you believe the president has endangered the country?
I think there's a distinct possibility that these five will, in fact, go back and into the battle.
When you have people this highly motivated...
That seemed to me fair comment. Tough questioning of a controversial deal. But in other Fox News pieces, Bo Bergdahl was himself becoming a target too. And for someone held hostage for so long, the tone was harsh.
We lost six Americans looking for what is a deserter.
That not only was he a deserter...
Looks to me like a deserter or a traitor or both.
But they also say that he might have been collaborating with the enemy. Maybe some say to say...
Confined to his army base in Texas, Bergdahl had no chance of giving his side of the story. And there was little sign of balance when Fox News then senior correspondent Megyn Kelly met some of Bergdahl's former platoon.
We are joined now by six members
of Bo Bergdahl's platoon. Guys, thank you all so much for being here. Raise your hand if you think he deserted. Wow. Raise your hand if you have some question about whether he deserted.
Wow. All right, go ahead. I'm not sure about Fox News' claim to be fair.
What do you make of this latest reporting by James Rosen that he had converted to Islam, that he fraternized openly with his captors, and declared himself a warrior for Islam, at least by August of 2012?
That one interview set the news agenda on this story. The media trial of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was now truly underway.
A cafe decked in flags and signs reading, "Standing with Bo" and "Welcome Home".
Before he went off to join the army, Bo had worked in Zany's Cafe in his hometown of Haley.
A woman serving at the bar.
Sue, the owner, had run the support campaign while Bo was in captivity.
Those ribbons have been up for 5 years. Right. And I know mine will stay up until Bo is safely returned to Haley. It's what we do in a small town for our own people.
In the 6 weeks following Bo's release, the town had been on the receiving end of hate mail and death threats.
And then during the time that the threats were the worst, I actually left town.
So you received threats yourself?
Yes. They walked in. They came in here.
People
face to face.
And the people from this town, from Haley? Or?
I hadn't recognized any of them.
On his army base in Texas, Bo was getting psychological support and beginning intensive debriefing.
San Antonio Military Medical Center. During his stay here, Sergeant Bergdahl will participate in reintegration, a process that will...
But less than 2 months after his release, the U.S. Army announced an investigation into his disappearance. It'd be led by a senior figure in the military, Major General Dahl.
The Army has named a general officer to lead its investigation into the case of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. Major General Kenneth Dahl will lead the probe. General Dahl's mission will be to ascertain facts about the sergeant's disappearance and capture back in June of 2009 from an outpost in Afghanistan.
More than a year after Bo's release, I returned to Haley. I'd been trying to talk to Bo, but his lawyers didn't want him talking to anyone. And Bo himself had chosen not to meet his own family. Bo's parents, Bob and Jenny, had kept out of the media spotlight since his release and only reluctantly agreed to meet me because I was a former hostage. They live a few miles outside of Haley in a remote valley. This is where Bo grew up and where he was homeschooled.
I'm now really nervous. I'm about to meet a mother who I know has been suffering beyond belief. I'm about to ask her questions, and I know how fragile she is. And she hasn't done an interview for 5 years he was in captivity. So it's a big deal for her, this. And I know I'm going to open up a whole lot of things she's been bottling up, emotions. It's a big responsibility.
He leaves his SUV at the bottom of an arid slope. Inside a bungalow, a brown-haired woman wipes off a photo frame of herself with a baby.
This is Beau. So dusty. This is Beau.
Yeah, it was a big baby.
Yeah. This is a fishing trip. Bo has always been an excellent fisherman and an excellent shot. Bob taught him how to shoot when he was probably 2 years old. Well, and this is all things that people have given us for Bo. POW flag that...
That's the missing in action one, isn't
was
it?
Was signed, yes. That was signed. All of these boxes are full of cards and newspapers and things for Bo. I need to go through them and try to get rid of some things. But
yeah.
We have a lot of distrust of journalists because of what they continue to do to our family. Again, for no good reason that I know of. They have so vilified, I would even say demonized.
Yeah.
My family. For what reason, Paul?
Who's the one who gave the go sign for the father and mother to show up in the Rose Garden and make that announcement yesterday? And meanwhile, he makes in his Arabic-speaking message to his son, he basically praises Allah at the end.
Well,
nice little touch. He says he was growing his beard because his son was in captivity. Well, your son's out now. Right. So if you really no longer want to look like a member of the Taliban, you don't have to look like a member of the Taliban. Are you out of razors?
It was polemics against Bob like that one that Jenny considered so unfair and unbalanced.
I'm a devout Christian. My husband is a devout Christian. Our children were raised that way. And I'm an American, and I feel that as an American, we are innocent until proven guilty. You know for a fact all yeah. countries aren't like that.
No.
And to take an American soldier and say that he's guilty before he's been judged or tried, well, he's been judged and tried by the political, now it's the American public. It's just not fair. That's what soldiers fight for. And he should have been given the chance to be innocent until proven guilty. Yeah. And I don't know that I should be talking about any of this publicly because it's so much bigger than this little podunk Idaho family.
Dappled sunlight on the slender Bob's bearded face.
You've been going through private turmoil in the most public way.
Yeah.
Jenny and I both were watching each other. I think we, in a slow motion way over 5 years, I'm sure we had several emotional breakdowns. Slow motion emotional breakdowns. And then you recover, so they don't seem like an emotional breakdown, but you've actually had a mild one. We just can't. It's not over, so you can't. You just got to hold on. I think we've gotten pretty good at it.
You've had lots of practice, Bob.
We have.
2 years after Bo had been captured, and with no release in sight, Bob took it into his own hands to get his son back.
2011.
I am the father of captured U.S. soldier Bo Robert Bergdahl. These are my thoughts. I can remain silent no longer.
You released a video, and I understand that video. You were trying to talk to them on their language.
Very poorly, yeah.
But in a manner that would appeal to them.
I personally appeal to General Kayani and General Pasha. Our family is counting on your professional integrity and honor to secure the safe return of our son.
Well, after Osama bin Laden was killed, you know, we were afraid, well, several times we were afraid they would take it out on Bo.
Yeah.
And you thought you would talk right to them.
Assalam alaikum.
I had to assume a worst case scenario that our government would fail to recover Bo and it would be left to us. And yeah, that's when I started growing my beard out. I wanted to look as masculine and as prehistoric as I possibly could.
Scary.
I immediately started making a long-term plan to travel to the region and set up shop and become immersed in the culture as much as possible and get him back. That was my motto. If you don't get him back, I will.
He had heard that they will trade a relative quite often. So I know he was planning on a trade.
You were prepared to walk
right
over mountains, surrounded by Taliban al-Qaeda,
to see his son again.
In 2013, Bob left on his rescue mission. He got as far as Qatar before the US authorities found out and put a stop on his passport.
I'm so proud of my husband. He did everything that he could think of to bring our son home alive. And he did an excellent job. He's home alive.
It's not just Bob who is being attacked as a Taliban sympathizer. It was being suggested that Bo himself had converted to Islam, and even worse, in captivity, had collaborated with the enemy.
Bo standing with his captors.
A highly contentious intelligence dossier was central to this incendiary news piece on Fox News.
According to secret documents obtained by Fox News, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, toward the end of his 5 years of captivity among the Haqqani network, was said to have converted to Islam. Bergdahl has converted to Islam and now describes himself as a mujahid. The report goes on, Bergdahl enjoys a modicum of freedom and engages in target practice with the local mujahideen, firing AK-47s. Bergdahl is even allowed to carry a loaded gun on occasion, the report said.
So during your son's captivity, the U.S. authorities were coming to you and saying, we heard he escaped, but we've heard intelligence reports or rumors that your son has converted, that he's collaborating, that he's joined the Mujahideen. What was your feeling when you read those?
I was saying, that a boy, because that's how you escape. You have to earn...
doubted your son?
No.
Did you ever think that perhaps he has converted?
What did he have to lose? I mean, after years in captivity and after trying to escape a dozen or so times or more.
The sun shines brilliantly over treetops. Sean's sitting outside a cabin in the woods.
But you know what? Many hostages convert to save their lives.
He smokes a cigarette, staring into space. Footage of Sean in an Afghan building.
I was captured for 4 months, and they asked me, my captors, asked me whether I'd like to convert. I've never spoken about this, I don't think. The Taliban commander came in, read out the Shura's findings, the court hearings. A bit like Beau, I was on trial. And they read out the hearing and said, I have hereby found innocent of all charges. The commander then paused and said, but the Shura decided to kill me anyway, to send a message to journalists not to try the same thing. So just as I thought I was freed, he laid that on me. And then he laughed and said, but don't worry. Saraj Shakani and myself overruled. So you're free to go. But then he turned to my translator and fixer, my good friend, who suffered in captivity with me worse than I did, because he didn't have that Western naive belief that it's hard to chop a man's head off. They turned to him and said the Shura has found him guilty, but that he would be willing, they were willing to let him go. And we thought it was a trick. So to save his life, I converted. And I don't like talking about it because I'd held out for 4 months. I wasn't gonna fucking convert to those hypocrites whose main god is the dollar. I didn't want to renounce my beliefs. I haven't spoken about that for 5 years. And I'm only doing so now because if it does come out that Beau did convert in captivity to save himself from being tortured, or after he was tortured, unless you've been in that situation, you can't judge that.
He leans back and sobs with his hands over his eyes before hunching forward and tilting his head away. He rubs his eyes and ears. The sun peeking over the treetops is a little less brilliant. Pickups and RVs crossing a busy intersection.
Before leaving Haley on this, my second trip, I wanted to find out more about Beau, about what had really shaped him. Beau had left his parents when he was 17. He was going through a difficult patch, and a former teacher of his in Haley, Sherry Horton, put him up.
I heard on the radio, American soldier captured. And I was like, shit, it's Beau. And I was like, just knew. Just knew. Beau's response to stressful situations, even when he had to just think through a thing, was to go into the mountains for a day and just sit on a rock overlooking. I mean, it's gorgeous here.
It is.
Looking, just kind of sitting, meditating.
Before joining the army, when Beau was 20, he went off to join the US Coast Guard. But in less than 1 month, he was discharged for being psychologically unfit.
He said he didn't agree with some of the philosophies. And keep in mind, he was still at this point, I think he was still only 20.
Yeah.
I don't think he had turned 21 even at this point. And, you know, still 20-year-old idealist who knows everything.
Yeah.
And things, you know. And so from what he said to me was things, it just didn't work. They would tell him to do things, and if he didn't agree with them, he kind of argued with them about, right, why am I having to do it? He was, yeah, a big questioner on why do we do this? And I remember having a conversation when he told me he was joining the Army. And I was like, you know, you understand that what you didn't like about the Coast Guard is going to be more so with the Army. And by that time, he thought he had matured enough and figured out and understood the process a little bit more, that he could handle it. And he had changed considerably from then to, you know, from Coast Guard to Army. There had been some change, but he was still, you know, he's still Beau. He's still kind of strong-headed. Beau's a questioner. He is going to ask why. He is going to want to know, what's the point of doing this? So it could come across as being a little bit unstable because you're not 100%, yeah, you said go run up that hill with a gun, let's go do that. You know, he's going to be what's on top of the hill.
Beau at the machine gun emplacement, overlooking green fields and desert.
When Beau walked off his base in 2009, he inadvertently stepped into a political minefield. America's war in Afghanistan was becoming increasingly unpopular, and President Obama wanted to bring it to an end.
Tonight I can announce that over the next year, another 34,000 American troops will come home from Afghanistan. This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
But his policy was strongly opposed by some in the Republican Party and in the Pentagon.
We're committed to winding down the war in Afghanistan, and we are committed to closing Gitmo. But we also made an ironclad commitment to bring our prisoners of war home. That's who we are as Americans.
So when President Obama welcomed Bob and Jani to the White House and used the occasion to underline his intention to close Guantanamo Bay and end the war in Afghanistan, it caused outrage amongst his critics. Bo was now in the spotlight.
Barbed wire gates at Camp Delta, lightning flashes above the White House, then a courtroom in Fort Bragg.
9 months after his release came the bad news for Bergdahl.
The U.S. Army Forces Command has thoroughly reviewed the Army's investigation and formally charged Sergeant Bergdahl with desertion, with intent to shirk important or hazardous duty, and misbehavior before the enemy by endangering the safety of a command, unit, or place.
Colonel Daniel King, U.S. Army spokesman. Sean's at a modern glass building.
One Fox News pundit had been leading the rest of the media pack on the Bergdahl story.
Okay, that's good.
He was former U.S. military intelligence officer Tony Schaefer. With leaks and intel briefings from his sources within the Pentagon, he was both eloquent and convincing.
I think it was a political decision based on trying to clear people out of Guantanamo Bay rather than trying to do what was best for the nation.
What can you say, what you're aware of from your source and you feel safe going on the record saying that you think he was guilty of?
My reading of the tea leaves, based on the facts I know. He walked off base with a purpose.
I hope you're not just reading tea leaves, Tony. This, you're saying to me, as your former DIA officer.
I'm saying, putting back my operative hat on, my assessment hat. He walked off base with a purpose. He wanted to do something. That something was within his own mind. I'm not sure if anybody really understands, except Bo Bergdahl, what he was going to do off post. But it was clear that he left post with an intention and a plan. There has to be a fundamental factual basis for the Article 99 charge. There has to be. The Army, in this case, in something this high profile, would not arbitrarily charge someone with Article 99, which essentially is a form of charging someone with cooperating with the enemy. It's collaboration.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's what it is. Misbehavior. It's misbehavior for the enemy. Essentially, you're giving aid and comfort to the enemy, one layer lower than actually defecting over to them.
Tony Schaefer was wrong about that. The Army has never charged Bergdahl with cooperating with the enemy. The Article 99 charge refers to endangering fellow soldiers. He was using a false definition to justify allegations.
Bo at the machine gun nest.
You are making comments that Bo walked off base with the intention of meeting the Taliban.
That's my information that I have.
But what did Tony Schaefer think about this contentious and disturbing report on Fox News? That Bergdahl had converted to Islam and gone over to the enemy. Repeated here by Megan Kelly.
What do you make of this latest reporting by James Rosen that he had converted to Islam, that he fraternized openly with his captors, and declared himself a warrior for Islam, at least by August of 2012?
Where did that come from? That there was even that talk that he'd helped make IEDs.
Look, I
don't think the Taliban need a young American teacher.
No, they have whole factories for that.
But you see what I mean? Where did that come from?
That's an excellent question. And the honest, and let me be, I've never talked to Megyn Kelly about this. I've never talked to her producers about this. The honest answer is, on the record, off the record, I have no idea where all those rumors came from.
Going for this extension.
In fact, the source of these damaging allegations was the terrorists themselves. The leaked intelligence dossier, reported by Fox News, itself says that the source is a member of the Haqqani network, a new contact, as it says, whose reliability has not yet been tested.
Within the context of Fox News, the Fox News constellation, they have a lot of military guys who have had some little bit of tidbits here and there. I think I'd like to believe my sources are better than theirs. I think mine have been correct more than theirs. You know, at least from my sources, I've talked to the guys who were in the room who actually were running the intelligence assets. So I know for a fact certain collection was conducted. I know certain information was obtained. The question now becomes how much of that is declassified or used in some forms.
Is there another element to this, that it's not just about Bo Bergdahl? He's become a political football.
Exactly. It's all political. Everything's political.
And the target is the president.
I don't necessarily think it's the president. I think it's the policy. At least that's my perspective. I'm a think tank guy. My guidance is, from my leadership, you need to attack the policy or the failings of the policy. That's it.
A statue of soldiers raising a flag.
Among Tony Schaefer's circle of ex-colleagues in military intelligence is Lieutenant General Mike Flynn. He'd been a director of the conservative think tank Schaefer worked for. Mike Flynn was a close advisor to Donald Trump during the election campaign and became the new president's first national security advisor. He'd been in charge of intelligence operations in Afghanistan in 2009 when Bergdahl went missing.
For the first 24 to 72 hours, I mean, we were in crisis operations, and I was personally diverting every single capability, human intelligence-wise, to signals intelligence, to unmanned aerial vehicles, to space-based systems. I mean, we really turned on to find this soldier. Obviously, what he found out was that these people that he wanted to go meet when he decided he was going to leave that base, they turned out to be not such nice people.
So you believe, sir, that he did walk off the base with the intention of meeting the Taliban?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's different to just walking off base, even deserting.
I think he walked off that base with the intention of deserting his unit to meet somebody out in the battlefield from the previous operations that they were involved in. And for what reason, I don't know. Whatever they discover in whatever investigations they can find, whatever they find. For Mike Flynn, I know what this kid did. He walked off of his camp when he shouldn't have, and he deserted his team.
Something that came up right at the beginning, the guys on the base, they were listening in on their radios to Taliban radio.
Yep.
And they intercepted a call, and at the time they deciphered it as, or they translated it as, we've got an American soldier here with a camera trying to find someone who speaks English, who wants to talk to the Taliban.
Yes, I got that report. So what you just said, I saw that report.
That was later partially discredited, but maybe it was a mistranslation, or do you feel...
Well, whatever the translation was, I remember that. I remember that particular one. So if it was mistranslated, which I don't think it was, what I was trying to match was that kind of information with what we were being told by his unit. And then when these guys said, hey, we found a U.S. soldier, here's what he's got, it just made a lot of sense that, wow, this guy deserted.
During his captivity,
yeah.
I know the U.S. military were getting reports that Bo had converted, that he was working with the enemy.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff.
Did you believe those reports?
I didn't believe any of it. I really didn't. The enemy is going to lie. They're going to deceive you all the time. And they're smart about it. Those guys are very good about it.
I did hear someone say the Haqqanis are better at this stuff than we are.
They're incredibly good at it. I mean, you know, I've seen where we've run after ghosts because of somebody taking their cell phone and making a call knowing that we were listening and saying something that they knew to be, part of their sort of code system, and just to cause us to divert resources.
So even though Mike Flynn was quickly convinced Bergdahl had deserted, he knew that some of the most serious allegations against Bergdahl were deliberate enemy disinformation. But other damaging and highly contentious allegations came from within the US military itself.
The six soldiers, they were killed after it was known Bergdahl was in Pakistan.
Yeah.
does that mean?
They were on operations that were for the purpose of trying to find that soldier.
What's the date today?
It's July 14th of 2009.
But at what point did you know that Bo Bergdahl was in Pakistan? Because it was within days, if not a week or two,
that
the Haqqanis had him in Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, and so in hindsight, we knew that. We know that. And I'm not sure if it was days or weeks, but or even a week. But I think in hindsight, we know that now. At the time, we did not know that. We knew that they were trying to get him across the border.
Bo on patrol. A rifle across his chest.
I was wondering whether Flynn would acknowledge that a lot of the flak directed at Bergdahl was in fact political, that the real target was President Obama.
A lot of this has become political anger because then later on the White House were also wrapping up the war and bringing back Bo. Seems to be kind of, they were making it political.
But... yeah, they did. I mean, they absolutely made this political. This was another, you know, we're finishing the problem. You know, we're pulling out and bringing Bo Bergdahl home is another page that we turn in the closure of this never-ending war. Well, the tragedy of getting into it shows the complexity of getting out of it. And you can't just give a big speech and call it a day.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. Warfare doesn't work like that.
But not all senior soldiers involved in the Bergdahl affair agreed with General Mike Flynn.
A hearing.
One of them is Lieutenant Colonel Jason Amerine, who had led the special operation to negotiate Bo's release. He'd been privy to all the intel.
In early 2013, my office was asked to help get Sergeant Bergdahl home.
I asked him for his expert assessment on the most serious allegations in the media, that Bo had intended to go over to the enemy, and why those making the allegations seemed so certain they were right.
But let's start with certainty.
Yeah.
I do not believe he went off to join the Taliban and then for some reason they changed their mind and made him a prisoner. I don't believe it. I saw indicators that wasn't the case, but I can't say with certainty that didn't happen.
There's been a year and a half of allegations on the media. They seem to echo the intel reports coming out at the time.
Intel reports are intel reports. If I'm out on the street and I have some intel source that, you know, I'm probably paying money to, and I say to that source, hey, so I hear that Bergdahl's a traitor. You know, do you have any information on that? Hey, he's going to give me a ton of information on it. That's a shoddy form of intelligence gathering. I mean, I would hear so many secondhand accounts of his acts of treason, so many of them were so easily discounted. If Bergdahl was out there training the Taliban on how to conduct an ambush, there'd be a video of it because that would be better propaganda than, you know, the actual operational impact of an ambush.
Yeah.
There are things like that that I would hear the stories and I would say, okay, well, where's the evidence? And I wouldn't see the evidence.
It was known he was in Pakistan before all those soldiers were killed looking for him in Afghanistan.
Yeah, but where it gets difficult is I have no doubt that there were young soldiers weeks and weeks after his capture that really did believe that they might find Bergdahl somewhere in southern Afghanistan.
But command knew he was in Pakistan.
Well, but that doesn't help the families of a loved one. My son, you know, if Private Jason out there died looking for Bergdahl and that's what all the other privates are saying he died doing, and then Bergdahl doesn't go to jail, I mean, you're going to have horrified people that simply never understood the big picture of what was going on, if we even understand the big picture.
Sean's being driven over a bridge on a clear, bright day.
It was clear that Lieutenant Colonel Amerine had himself seen no credible intelligence that Bergdahl had actually intended to go over to the Taliban, nor had in fact done so. So what was the source of those grave allegations? David Sedney had been the senior Department of Defense officer in Afghanistan at the time and had total access to all classified intelligence.
Very shortly, through, I would call the military grapevine, there began to be reports, and this would be things coming from sergeants and privates and stuff, that he had left with the intention of trying to negotiate with the Taliban. So we heard those rumors for the grapevine inside the U.S. military, but I never saw any evidence it was true, and I never saw any evidence that anybody took any action based on that, those kind of rumors, innuendo.
Rumored.
Well, rumored, but...
Rumored
intelligence, but it's also people who are sincere, people who believe they saw somebody who could have been an American almost anywhere in Afghanistan.
These aren't just rumors coming in from Afghan sources. Your own people are telling you that Bo walked off base with the intention of meeting the Taliban.
It was all based upon supposition, and that supposition all came actually from a very small group of people, and those were the ones who served with him. My own belief is that a certain percentage of the so-called rumors that you talked about are things that people have just made up because they became so convinced of the fragments of what they'd heard that they constructed a narrative that became real in their own minds. And I've talked with these people. These are people who are captains and colonels who believe in the U.S. military, or were at the time, who believed the kinds of things you said. They believed it because other people in their social structure, other people in the U.S. Army told them, and they are accustomed to believing and trusting what their comrades say.
Soldiers walking up a road towards a settlement under a rocky outcrop.
It's the claim that six soldiers from Bergdahl's battalion lost their lives searching for him that's amongst the most damaging of all the allegations. At least two soldiers searching for Bo immediately after he deserted were seriously wounded. But the six soldiers named by candidate Trump were all killed between August 18th and September 6th, 2009, at least 7 weeks after Bo went missing. Army investigations into each death concluded that none were on missions whose purpose was to find Bergdahl. They died sometime after the Pentagon had ended the intense search and rescue mission for Bo Bergdahl, and when intelligence was saying he'd already been moved into Pakistan.
What's your name? My name is Bo Bergdahl.
What point did you know Private Bergdahl was not only missing, but in fact had been captured?
As the week went by, it did become clear that he had been, he was in the possession of groups that were at least affiliated with the Haqqani group in Pakistan. And we knew from past experience that anyone who they captured, they would move to their headquarters in Pakistan. Within, I would say, a matter of weeks, it was clear that he was in Pakistan.
What's the date today? It's July 14th of 2009.
Once Private Bergdahl was taken, the Haqqanis communicated a request for an exchange plus a monetary ransom. The overwhelming probability then at that point was that he was there and under their control and in Pakistan. Rumors that I mentioned, this feeling inside the military, has been used politically by people in the U.S. political system to try and attack the president. So it's become involved.
Bo's become a political football, you're saying?
His case has become a political football for some people in a way that I personally think is disgusting.
We have a guy, six young people, great people, were killed looking for him. A dirty, rotten traitor.
Donald Trump repeated the discounted claim about the six soldiers time after time on the campaign trail.
Six young, beautiful people were killed trying to find him, right? Six people were killed looking for him, okay? Six people were killed, young, unbelievable. I watched the parents on television.
Sean gets out of a taxi outside a station. He passes a bride and groom on a concourse and heads towards the trains.
On September 18th, 2015, 6 months after being charged with desertion and endangering the lives of his fellow soldiers, Sergeant Bergdahl was finally due at a pretrial hearing in Texas.
A journalist surrounded by lights and equipment.
If he's convicted, he could face a life sentence. That's the latest from Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio. Casey Stiegel, Fox 66 News.
Okay. Is everything? We're all good?
Okay. Perfect.
How are you, Casey?
Good, how are you?
I got the camera on you today. Oh. Hang on, you had the camera on me yesterday.
I know. Yeah, I don't know if Fox will allow this.
Really?
Yeah.
Hearing's going on downstairs. Just got my first ever sight of Bo. It's quite strange to see him sitting there in his dress blue uniform, head bowed, sitting next to his lawyer. And it's in a small room, no cameras allowed, which is why all the cameras are here behind me.
We will, of course, continue to keep you updated. From Fort Sam Houston, Amanda Weber.
For the first time since his release, journalists, and through them the American public, were beginning to hear Bo Bergdahl's side of the story. According to Major General Dahl, who led the investigation into Bergdahl's disappearance, Bo's explanation for leaving his outpost was that he intended to walk to another base several miles away to make a complaint to senior officers about the leadership issues in his own unit.
Major General Kenneth Dahl said Bergdahl left the operating post he was stationed at to try to get to a forward operating base 31 kilometers away. Dahl said Bergdahl wanted to cause a search and rescue operation so he could get a face-to-face with a general because he wanted to air grievances he had with his unit leadership.
The Major General who conducted the Army's two-month investigation into Bergdahl's actions was asked if he thought Bergdahl should go to jail.
Dahl said he thinks jail time would be inappropriate in this case.
General Kenneth Dahl replied that a jail sentence would be inappropriate.
Live at Fort Sam Houston, Garrett Berger, KSAT 12 News.
The defense case today, I thought, was a blockbuster. I thought that, you know, they had the Major General who did this exhaustive investigation, who says he shouldn't go to jail, who says he's an idealistic, naive, misguided, odd young man. That then is superseded, I mean, even overdone with the next guy who's this former SEER instructor. He weeps on the stand as he recalls the suffering and the honor of Bergdahl while in captivity.
That guy was Terrence Russell from the DOD team debriefing Bergdahl. He told the hushed courtroom that Bo was repeatedly badly beaten with cables, tortured, and left in his own excrement. Bo, he testified, had escaped on at least two occasions, once lasting 8 days, and he was then held in a 7-foot metal cage for 3 years. The torture he endured, according to Russell, was the worst suffered by any POW since the war in Vietnam.
Sean's standing in the car park, near soldiers and cameramen outside.
I've just had to come out for a cigarette because it's mind-blowing. I've just been listening to the testimony of a hostage specialist, the Department of Defense hostage specialist who's debriefed more than 150 prisoners of war. He ended his testimony in tears, saying he'd never seen
He has another puff of his cigarette and walks on. A reporter on CNN with the strap line, "General, jail for Bergdahl inappropriate."
This hardcore expert had to wipe tears from his eyes and his voice cracked with emotion. You could have heard a pin drop in the hearing room and in the viewing room.
I would say the last 2 days were a game changer. You know, his side had never been out there, and although he didn't testify, I think we in the media at least, and hopefully our viewers eventually will have a sense of what the real story is. And I don't think the real story was out there until 48 hours ago.
We've heard so many allegations on the media, not just Fox, but what we heard in there today from the military experts who investigated him was something completely different. And it was a little bit shocking, wasn't it?
Oh, clearly. I just felt like I had not heard the story until now. I think that we have not heard the story until now. And I think probably Bergdahl's story hasn't been told. Maybe you're going to tell it.
I hope to, but...
Yeah, yeah.
You know the next question I'm asking you?
Go for it.
You're a journalist.
Uh-huh.
Who do you work for?
I'm working in this case with Fox News Channel.
Soldiers salute.
But back at Fox News, Tony Schaefer was as passionate and polemical as ever. The testimony hadn't shifted his view at all.
Do you buy that defense? He was just simply wanting to go out there and report the discipline problems inside of his unit.
I think I'd buy space alien abduction before I buy that. I mean, come on, let's take this seriously. And also, I've heard a thing about torture. Oh, I was tortured. Gee, I think if you walk outside the wire, present yourself to the enemy, they capture you, I think you kind of created your own circumstance for your own bad action. So I don't buy it at all, not remotely, Clayton.
Unsurprisingly, Mike Flynn wasn't buying it either.
Major General Dahl said he believed Bo Bergdahl when he said he walked off base to try and walk to another base to make a complaint.
Yeah, and if Kenny Dahl, Major General Dahl, who I know, was sitting right here where you're sitting, I would say, Kenny, that's bullshit. You really believe that?
Sean's making a phone call.
Hello, Bob. Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to call you. The hearing ended. I was in the corridor and I just met Bo.
It looked like a good day for Bo. A likely end to the unfolding judicial process. But it'd be up to the presiding officer to decide whether to accept the general's recommendations of no jail time and that this case should not now go to a full court-martial.
I guess this is a good day, isn't it?
This is a good day ever since the first day he was released. We've had good days ever since then, no matter what has happened, because it was an unprecedented miracle that he is out of that alive. For us to know that he was tortured the way he was, I think we thought that was a possibility. So one of our contacts assured us that Bo was being well taken care of, according to Sharia law, etc. Yeah. So for us to find this out was shattering.
Oh, I see.
Shattering. And I think, you know, it always niggled at the back of our mind that we could be lied to, and yeah, that could be a possibility, and yet you can't really go there.
No.
Because if you go there, all was lost.
Was that the first time in the hearing that it's really been laid out how, because I'd never heard that phrase, the worst case of prisoner abuse since Vietnam?
We had not heard that either before. I could tell, I think I told you that before, in the Taliban's video of him sitting in the pickup truck when they took the hood off, you could tell that he had not been treated perfectly.
Well, apparently, sure, according to the specialist, the military experts, before releasing him, before the handover, they fastened him up, as it were.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Well,
took him out of the cage. And
I had not heard that, but I hope that gave him hope. But I know he had probably had hope before. He probably didn't even know until he got in the helicopter that it was actually going to work this time.
We feel very blessed.
Our son is still alive. Other parents, you know, didn't have that blessing. And from the first day, just the fact that he was alive, we had to live with hope all those years. That's really all we had. And trust in God.
On the bookshelf in their office, signs reading Laugh Often, Love Much, and God Bless America. A pair of deer graze and roam outside Bob and Janny's fence. It's dusk, and traffic's flowing past services.
A month after the hearing,
there finally came great news for Bo and his family. The presiding officer recommended no further action against him.
We've got Bergdahl, and yesterday I heard he probably won't even serve any time, and 30 years ago he would have been shot. And people are tired of it.
I wanted to hear firsthand from Terence Russell, the expert with the military's Joint Personnel Recovery Agency, who debriefed Sergeant Bergdahl on his return home. His team were able to trace a lot of the allegations on the US media back to Haqqani disinformation.
During the debriefing, talking to some of the intelligence debriefers and about this and the information and the huge disparity between what had been being reported while he was in captivity to what he was relating to us during the debriefing, they were absolutely amazed at the level of disinformation that the Taliban and the Haqqanis were spreading regarding Bo Bergdahl. They didn't have any concept of just how widespread this disinformation was that they had been spreading about Bergdahl in captivity. So what the reality was for Bo Bergdahl was quite different than what the Taliban had been telling news sources and had been leaking and getting into the intelligence channels, much different than what they had been telling Bo Bergdahl's mother and father when Bob Bergdahl was in contact with them.
They had said they were treating him well.
Correct, right. And in fact, the conditions of captivity were horrible. It was anything but that.
Scared I won't be able to go home. It is very unnerving to be a prisoner.
You were saying in the hearing that actually many of the allegations in the media against Bo, you were able to trace back to Taliban, Haqqani misinformation and propaganda.
Right, and that's exactly what it was. You know, they would keep everybody, you know, there's a reason the enemy uses disinformation and misinformation. And in this case, they did that. And it did not certainly serve Bo Bergdahl well. People believe what they hear sometimes. And then when you come to find out what the facts are of the case, that it was anything but. Here you have a young soldier with no training, doing his best to fight the enemy in a way that nobody else has to fight the enemy. You couldn't ask for a better soldier in captivity than what Bo Bergdahl did. He continued to fight the enemy, he continued to resist. He escaped within weeks of his initial capture. When they recaptured him and brought him back, they spread-eagled and secured him to a metal bed frame. While he was shackled to this metal bed frame in a spread-eagle position, they took a plastic pipe, I imagine it was like a plumbing pipe,
yeah. And
they started beating his feet and his legs repeatedly with this plastic pipe. Later, they moved to using a copper cable. The idea was to just beat him and injure his legs and his feet so that he could not walk away again. A year after his initial escape, he escapes a second time, trying everything that he can do to get away from his captors. Now, when he got recaptured, I asked him, well, you know, if they tortured you the first time, what did they do to you the second time? When they had him take his shirt off, and they saw that he was nothing but skin over bones. He had been out evading for 8.5 days, living on grass and water. He was physically at his limit. Bo Bergdahl said that they knew that if they started beating him and torturing him, that they were likely to kill him. And that's not what they wanted to do. They wanted him as a mechanism to gain some benefit. So they didn't abuse him, but what they did do was almost as bad, putting him into a cage for 3.5 years and just shoving him in a dark corner and not dealing with him and barely keeping him alive over that long period of time.
A photo of a bald and drawn Beau.
Being held in a cage with a hood over your head for not just weeks at a time, months at a time, but for 3.5 years he was held in solitary confinement. He was held in isolation, and that isolation is psychologically just devastating.
Zooming into Beau's weary eyes.
What do you say to those who now say Beau Bergdahl should be punished for walking off his base?
Well, I think that he does, you know, we live by the code of conduct, and for military members, this code of conduct is important, and the code of conduct says you are responsible for your actions. I believe that Beau Bergdahl should be held responsible for his actions relative to leaving that post. But, you know, it's my opinion that to say that he deserted with no intention of coming back flies in the face of what the facts are. Yes, he left his post, and, you know, the reasons for that have been reported. But it was not to go over to the enemy. It's just absolutely crazy that anybody would consider him to be a traitor when, in fact, he was in captivity, an honorable soldier.
A photo of a one Beau against a white background. Sean's on the road.
Terence Russell was right. In captivity, Beau had resisted the enemy like a one-man army. So why did he walk off base? I went back to Idaho to talk to his family.
Sean's walking around Bob and Janny's bungalow. He heads inside and into their dining room. Janny's reaching into an oven.
Janny, you're not cooking dinner, are you?
Not
I've lost count of how many meals you've made me.
I love to cook.
You know what I did hear?
What?
That the first food Beau asked for was peanut butter when he got released.
Yeah. If you'd asked anybody in the family, they would have known that.
I wanted to ask Bob what he knew about Beau's psychological problems. In the pre-trial hearing, Beau's mental health issues had been a critical issue. In his journals at the time, there was a two-page where he's writing zip or Velcro, zip or Velcro, zip or Velcro over two pages. Looks to me like on the edge of a nervous breakdown. I don't know what that is.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
I think anybody who is entertaining ideas like running 18 miles to the FOB has broken down.
What did come up in the hearing was that your son, after 23, 29 days in the US Coast Guard, had been rejected, and the term was, they used the phrase psychologically unfit. No one was saying, you know, that's just a medical report.
Right.
But he was found there in the base,
right.
US Coast Guard, hands in his head, some blood in his hands, and so he was asked to leave on medical reasons. Knowing what you knew from what happened in the US Coast Guard, were you not really concerned?
We didn't know that. We learned about his short stint in the Coast Guard when his effects came home and we saw this order dismissing him from the Coast Guard.
Oh my God.
Beau in uniform with his parents.
It was becoming more and more clear to me that Beau should never have been allowed to join the US Army because of the psychological problems for which the US Coast Guard had thrown him out. But when he joined up in 2008, knowing about his problems, the US Army issued him a medical waiver.
Bob's chopping wood by a shed, but the log gets stuck on the blade, and he laughs when he can't split it.
Despite his psychological issues, Beau had resisted the enemy in captivity. His father, on the other hand, reached out to the Taliban to save his son, and many said he went too far. But at least now Bob had shaved off his beard.
I grew it in solidarity for my son's captivity in this prehistoric land of Afghanistan, where male patriarchal culture is so dominant.
Let me say something directly to the Taliban. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.
To be a good presuppositional Christian, I had to know the worldview of other people.
I only speak a little Pashto, but I'm trying. Tirtaday, daftarday katarday. Tirtaday, zapalaryam.
But you're now being getting drawn in and sympathetic, and now we know your son endured the worst torture any prisoner has faced since Vietnam.
Yeah.
These are people you were...
That hurts. And had I traveled there and discovered those facts,
these are you people you were empathizing with.
Well, yeah. But
putting your son spread eagle. I don't want to be
empathizing.
I'll just give you one element. They were beating your son with copper cables and locking him in a cage.
Yeah. It probably, but if I had to discover that personally on my own, as his father having been granted quote unquote safe passage, that would probably had been completely revoked at that point.
I do not live here. I live in Afghanistan. My cell phone is set on Afghan time. My weather is Afghan weather. I might be standing here, but I am living vicariously through my son.
And appealing to the Taliban to save your son?
Whatever. I don't care.
You reached out and you've lost the American public.
I don't care. If America hates me for getting my son back, well, then fuck them.
Yeah.
If you don't understand that it's a father's capacity as a father to do everything he can to get his flesh and blood back,
yeah,
then you're condemning Abraham from getting Lot back. You're condemning biblical theology. Blood is thicker than water.
Right.
Jesus will go to the utter end to save the lost sheep. He'll leave the 99 to get the 100th.
A mountain range near Bob and Jenny's property is bathed in golden hues. Bob's carefully laying logs inside an oil drum as a fire burns.
As Christmas 2015 approached, Bob and Jenny were still waiting for news about whether their son Beau would face a court-martial. Despite all their prayers for his safe return, their nightmare hadn't ended.
So that was 2008, and is that the last time you all saw him?
Yeah, basically, yep.
It's the last time I saw him.
Yeah.
The photo shows Beau with his parents on a wintry evening.
So even tonight, as we sit here, the report's now gone to the general, presumably to decide whether this goes to court-martial. So you're still in the weeds with this.
Still in limbo. It's been over 6.5 years now, and we're still in limbo as to everything, one way or another. But our son is alive, and that's a miracle.
I mean, Bob, I think, you know, when I know Danny's worried, but when I think about it, that your son was captured and tortured by the enemy and now being held on a base and put through mental torture here in America, really. It'd be almost inhuman of you not to be angry and bitter.
Yeah, Jenny's the most forgiving person I've ever known, and most people I've ever known.
Jenny looks contemplative. Their cat looks out of a window at night, and the moon shines brightly in a clear sky. It's a new day on the road, and Sean's passing a large, squat government building.
But the Pentagon was under intense pressure to prosecute Bergdahl, and not just from the media. Senator John McCain, an ex-Vietnam POW, had threatened the army that if they didn't prosecute, the Senate would investigate.
Snow-crested mountains, with a sliver of amber sunlight picking out trees dotting their rocky slopes. Bob's chopping a tall log in the snow near his shed.
On December the 14th, 2015, General Robert Abrams, the commander of US Army Forces Command, announced that Bo would now face a full court-martial.
Another piece of breaking news related to Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, that we're hearing he will now face a general court-martial.
Now, this is significant news, Brooke, in light of the fact that there was a recommendation that pretty much said, you know what, I've reviewed this, I've evaluated this from the underlying Army investigator, and as a result of it, we should really end this here. Well, the general, of course, went against that recommendation, and as a result of that, because of the full-blown trial that he's now exposed to, he could face a life sentence.
Snow-capped mountains and telephone poles near a line of snow-covered trees. A road sign for the Interstate 410 and Texas 130 roads.
I'd been trying to get an interview with Bo since he was released, and now finally I got the call. Bo was ready to talk. We agreed to meet in a remote farmhouse near his base in San Antonio, Texas. But I was now dreading coming face to face with my fellow hostage, because it would mean coming face to face with my own past. Some experiences are so traumatic, they never quite fade into memory, but live forevermore in the present tense. And as I walked into that tool shed, it was like stepping back into my own cell.
Bo's in a black cap in a cluttered shed, illuminated by a stark light.
Now listen, let me say hello first. Is that light okay, or is it too strong in your face?
Oh, it's all right.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you nervous?
Oh, yeah, certainly. No, I am nervous. I'm always nervous around people, though.
I'm not sure people are really... And maybe no one ever can begin to fathom what it's like to be held captive for 5 years.
There are no rules to surviving. When you're in a survival mode, there really are no rules when it comes to drinking urine, when it comes to, you know, eating food that has been thrown in the dirt that you know is basically mixed with feces. There's no rules to surviving. Every day, basically, at some point in time, I'd tell myself, you're not making it out of this. You're a dead man. And that...
Did you become used to being beaten? I mean, you were beaten with copper cables.
Yeah, in the very beginning, that was the most frequent times for it. But then after my escape, because my health had gone so bad, I mean, that was another reason why I was able to escape, was because my health was going bad. It was getting so bad that I was literally looking at myself, you know, looking at my joints, looking at my ribs, and I was going, I'm just going to die here from sickness, or I can die escaping.
I can't believe you kept trying to escape. That kind of courage, the first escape, the second escape, but what kept driving you on? Because that's why you ended up enduring the worst case of prisoner abuse, that you kept escaping and they kept punishing you.
It's a combination of so many things, I think, and... One of the things that drove me was, you get to that point of being executed. Like, you know, they showed me movies or videos, home videos of people being executed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's extremely graphic how a guy with his hands tied behind his back and his feet tied up, and they're hands and feet are pulled up, so the guy's arching,
Yeah.
And then, you know, they grab his hair, they grab his chin, and then they start sawing away at his neck. And they don't use sharp blades, and they don't go very fast.
I've seen it.
You can, yeah.
And they saw away.
Yeah. And
my greatest fear, I think, was having my throat cut in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that... I don't think there's anyone out there who would find that a very nice reality to find themselves in. The fact that the guys who are on the other side of the door, they don't just cut people's throats. They delight in cutting people's throats because it's culturally and religiously acceptable and delightful and justified. It wasn't being scared of dying. It was forcing myself to embrace that I was a dead man, that didn't matter what direction I went in, if I stayed or if I went, I was dead. You know, that fatalistic, that, you know, and that was where, you know, the moments of taking a deep breath and just saying, let it go, in the sense of life, you know.
Walking through hills in Afghanistan.
Late 2010 saw Bo's longest escape for 8 days, confirmed by both US military intelligence and the Taliban.
I'm sitting there in the corner with, you know, a room full of guys with, you know, AK-47s and pistols in their holsters, and basically I'm sitting there going, I just escaped from, you know, their house after the guy that was guarding that house told me that if I tried to escape, they're going to kill me. And when I got to that room, when they first brought me into that room, and the Haqqani guy got there, and he sat down in the middle of the room, and he looks at me and he says, 2 days, we're going to kill you. And, you know, and I just sat there. I just sat there. And everybody sat there. And I just kind of looked down at, you know, I looked up at him. I said, oh. And I looked back down at my hands. You know, because I'm sitting there. There's nothing, you know, I was done.
You resigned to your fate.
Yeah, I was exhausted. My body was burned out. I was passing out from just standing up. And it didn't matter. You know, I resigned myself to that.
And that's when they came up with the cage to stop him from ever escaping again.
When you say a cage, what is that? What are you talking about, a cage?
It's a cage that was welded together. It's about 7 foot long by about 6 foot wide, and about maybe 6 feet by 1 inch tall.
And you're, how tall are you? You're
just shy of 6 feet.
So you, and that was after that escape, that 8-10 day escape, they decided this guy keeps running away, we're gonna stick him in a cage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how long were you in that cage for?
For the remainder of the time. Everywhere I went, there was a cage.
But how long is that?
So
a year?
First year, so second, third, fourth, and into the fifth year.
Well, you were 3 or 4 years in a cage?
Yeah.
And would you be kept in this cage at night, a few hours, would you be allowed out of the cage?
For majority of the time, the only times I was, when they first put the cage in the room and I was put into it, they would take me out twice a day to go to the latrine. And when I went to the latrine, they'd have to have handcuffs on me. So I basically, the trade-off was, you know, for leaving the cage, I had to have handcuffs on me 24/7. And so I was that way for, you know, extended period of time.
Did you exercise in the cage?
I couldn't actually exercise in the cage because it was an elevated cage, and the bars on the bottom were extremely thin, and they cut into the bottoms of my feet. And then in the first year in the cage, the second winter, that was when my feet just went to.
The U.S. military heard you'd converted inside. They asked your father, by the way, they said, what do you think? And he said, I don't believe it. He'll only be doing that to fool them so he can escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's... If they literally thought that was possible, then it just it discredits the professional psychologists and professional investigators that were aware of who, looking into who I was. You go talk to the people who I know, you go talk to the people who I was around most, and they're going to say, no, he's not going to be that type of a person. Mm. It's insulting. Frankly, it's very insulting that the idea that they would think I did it.
People are now saying you should be put in jail. What's the Leavenworth, the military jail?
Yeah.
And you could be facing 5 years in prison.
Yeah. At least they had the decency of saying, I'm the guy who's going to cut your head off. But being back here, it's just like, that guy who you just passed in the hallway with a piece of paperwork that he just had you sign could very easily be the person, or very easily be representing the people who are going to make sure that you spend the rest, years in prison, or they're going to make sure that they hit you with everything they can.
Donald Trump suggested in the old days you'd have been shot.
Yeah.
When America was strong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that?
Yeah, and that's... We may as well go back to kangaroo courts and lynch mobs. The people who want to hang me, you're never going to convince those people. The people who are to the point of saying, yeah, just shoot them, you can never convince those people to change their minds.
And it hurts, though.
It does hurt.
These are your fellow countrymen.
Yeah, and...
Fellow soldiers.
Yeah, it does hurt. However, you can't change that. So you either dwell on it or you try to, you simply say, okay. And you move on.
And when this airs, you may be facing a jail sentence.
Possibly, yes.
Footage from Trump headquarters, Hilton Midtown, New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump! Thank you, it's been an honor. God bless. Thank God.
Gliding over fields and woodland.
Bo had been used as a political football, especially in the presidential campaign. The attacks on him had been based on false allegations and fake news, just like in his media trial. For Bo's family, though, caught up in the eye of this storm, the whole thing had been traumatic. I'd found coming home difficult and had suffered post-traumatic stress disorder. But for Bo, coming home had certainly been harder than captivity. And in a surprise development days before his trial, he decided to plead guilty to both charges. But not all his critics agreed with President Trump that Bo should be shot.
I mean, I don't think that he should serve another day in any sort of confinement or jail or anything like that. I think there has to be a decision by the United States military about, his service, how his service is characterized. That's a different issue. But I think if I were the judge, if I were the military judge, let's say, or if I were a judge judging Bo Bergdahl, I would not put him another day in captivity. And I would actually recommend, if not direct, that he be given some sort of, mental health support as part of his captivity. Because frankly, even though he put himself into this situation to a degree, we, the United States government, and the United States military put him in Afghanistan.
I love my family and I love my friends. The names that I've given, my mom, Janny, my father, Bob,
You talk about you missing home, you missing your family. See, but it's come out that you haven't met your family since you've been back a year and a half.
Family is a very difficult thing. It's a very complicated issue. You can choose your friends, but you can't choose, strangely enough, you can't choose your enemies and you can't choose your family. So there's a lot of issues.
Bob staring into space outside.
Family dynamics are complicated, especially when you have really strong personalities like our family does. and things will be fine, regardless of how long it takes and what comes to pass. Mm. It's just it's part of the drill. This has been hard on all of us.
Bob carries logs into the shed, piling them up neatly. Jenny's outside near some trees.
A good parent shows unconditional love, I guess. Yeah. And I am still fighting for my son. That's my baby. No one else saved his life several times as a baby. You know, no one else gave birth to him. No one else was there when he teethed on and on and on.
Yeah.
It's my son. It's our son.
She nods emphatically. A family photo of the Bergdahls when Beau was a young boy. Then a photo of Beau in his military beret.
Whatever the reason Beau Bergdahl deserted his base, he has paid a terrible price. Estranged from his family, tortured by the Taliban, vilified by his comrades, attacked by politicians and judged by the media. But how do you punish a man who's already spent 5 years in captivity? Surely he's suffered enough.